Hi there, it's Matt here, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, I want to introduce a new type of episode to the podcast. It is called Hot Off the Press. In addition to covering all of the hundreds of incredible topics in sleep science, in this new type of episode, I want to give you a taste of the latest and greatest, the most exciting new studies that have only recently come out and that I find utterly fascinating. So together, we're going to walk out on the very leading edge of scientific knowledge, things that we've never known before that have only now just come to light. Today, we're going to address the question of excessive slumber. I often get asked two related questions. Am I getting enough sleep? And in addition, can I get too much sleep? This hot off the press new study addresses both of these questions. What is enough sleep? And is there such a thing as too much sleep? But our story doesn't start with this new paper. There was one study that came just before it that added the foundation layer for which this new study would be able to seat itself on. These two questions, what is enough sleep and is there such a thing as too much sleep, may sound like complex questions. But we have very standard scientific ways to answer these questions. And one of the most widely accepted measures of optimal sleep dates all the way back to the origins of human sleep science in the 1960s, and it's quite simple. If you are left to your own devices, without any undue influence from artificial things that would pervert the true expression of your sleep need, things such as a maniacal work schedule or excessive caffeine consumption, or the trappings of modernity such as excessive evening daylight or digital technology, if you removed all of those things, how much sleep would your brain and your body naturally get? Where would your sleep need settle down in terms of an optimal amount? And when you settle into that optimal amount, how do we know that it's optimal and not too much sleep? We address these questions using a very scientifically controlled method. We bring people into the laboratory and we have them stay there for several weeks straight. And they are disconnected from society. They are disconnected from any work schedules. They are disconnected from any prototypical behaviors like caffeine and alcohol that could distort the true expression of their sleep need. And in doing so, we allow the brain and the body to express to us in the data what is optimal sleep, what is enough sleep. And that's precisely the question that a team from Japan ingeniously answered in the study that came before these new findings. This is how they addressed the question. They took a group of healthy young participants. And I'll come back to why I placed a hard vocal emphasis on the young part of that equation in just a little while. But that group of healthy young adults first had their sleep tracked at home for approximately 2 weeks. And that was imperative. It allowed the scientists to first determine what participants' typical sleep duration was. In other words, what the participants deemed to be sufficient sleep. Well, it was surprisingly good news, or at least it seemed that way. Because during the at-home assessment for the first two-week baseline, those individuals were getting, on average, 7.37 hours of sleep each night. Now, you would think that that's a handsome and sufficient bounty of sleep. And indeed, they were obtaining what many of us in the sleep field, myself included, and also the CDC, would consider as sufficient sleep. But was it optimal sleep? Was it their true sleep need? Was it the amount of sleep that was truly enough for them? Or instead, was there a hidden sleep debt that was lingering within their system that had been building up each night and it wasn't their true sleep optimal sweet spot. That's where the second part of the experiment came in. A sponsor of today's show is Inside Tracker. Inside Tracker is a service, and they come to your home, as they do for me, and they will analyze your blood and your DNA to know precisely what is happening inside of you regarding a host of different blood and metabolic and hormonal health metrics. What I also like is that in addition to the results, they then provide you with a personalized set of recommended, I guess, sort of lifestyle changes and suggestions to better optimize your health as a consequence of what those results were for you, that unique snowflake. So you can use the link insidetracker.com/Matt Walker, and you will get a healthy discount from your purchase. So again, that is insidetracker.com/Matt Walker. After the 2-week at-home evaluation, the participants were then brought in for phase two. And during phase two, they stayed in the laboratory for a prolonged 14-day period. And here, they were monitored around the clock for 24 hours, and their sleep was assessed using high-grade polysomnography, electrodes on the head, the gold standard method. And after an initial baseline night, just for them to get used to the equipment, for the next 9 nights straight, those individuals were given 12 hours of time in bed, each and every night. Let's recall what our measure of optimal sleep need is. The amount of sleep an individual, or any organism for that matter, will sleep under natural, unconstrained conditions, and a sleep amount that produces optimal brain and body function without showing any impairment. Despite coming into that sleep laboratory second phase of the study seemingly very well rested without any debt, remember they were getting on average before coming into that second phase 7.37 hours of sleep a night, despite that, there was a hidden sleep debt. They were not hitting their true natural sleep need. In the first few nights in the second phase of the study, their sleep rocketed up, and it went up to 10.59 hours of sleep on that first night. But please don't misconstrue that. As I said, we don't conclude then at that point that on the first night, this measure of 10.59 hours of sleep is their natural sleep need. This is just the early phase of an artificial sleep rebound caused by their sleep debt. And it's a little bit like coming off a drug. We just need to give them time to wash out that sleep debt before they finally hit their optimal sleep amount, the true sleep sweet spot. And indeed, across those remaining nights, sleep gradually decreased down from that 10.5 hours. And then they hit a very clear, very steady state equilibrium that did not change across the remaining nights. And it happened around night four. How much sleep did they acquiesce to start getting? Well, they settled down to an average of approximately 8.75 hours of sleep a night. In other words, 8 hours and 45 minutes. Now, that word average is important for me to point out. For some individuals, that optimal sleep amount that they acquiesced to was around 7.5, and for others, it was closer to 9.25 hours a night. Nevertheless, the average overall of the group was around 8.75 hours a night. And once again, I want to make this point. It's not meaningfully useful or scientifically precise for me to tell you then that every adult in the world requires precisely 8.75 hours of sleep a night for optimal health and longevity. You should be very wary of anyone offering such singular advice applied across an entire species. including people like me in the past. Oh, past naivety, Matthew. So that was an earlier study that helped teach us what sleeping enough may actually look like. However, a skeptic could challenge these findings on the basis of it being just one study without any replication. This is where the new hot-off-the-press findings come in. The study came from a joint team of researchers from Harvard Medical School in the US and the University of Surrey in the UK. They independently confirmed the results and then extended them with even more fascinating nuance and importance. This US and UK team examined a total of 50 young adults. And again, I'm going to place an emphasis on young for reasons that I will explain. After a similar at-home phase of measuring their standard sleep amount, the participants were once again brought into the controlled sleep laboratory environment. And they had their sleep recorded, again using electrodes, during an inpatient stay of up to 28 days. And for each one of those nights during the inpatient stay, those individuals were allowed to spend between 14 to 16 hours of time in bed. Just as we saw in the first study, during the initial night after they came into the laboratory, despite seemingly being well rested, they had a spike in their initial amount of sleep. They went up to 9, even 10 hours of sleep that first night. And then, once again, everyone started to settle down into their own equilibrium state. What was striking was the number. The optimal sleep amount, on average, for that group in this new study was 8.6 hours a night. It was near identical to the results of the independent study in a different population evaluated halfway around the world in Japan, which, as you'll remember, was 8.75 hours a night. In fact, in the new study from the US and the UK teams, even when those participants in this new study were given a 12-hour period of time in bed at night, together with an additional 4-hour nap opportunity in the afternoon, rather than getting 16 hours of time straight in bed, those individuals still obtained somewhere between about 8.6 to 9 hours of total sleep when you combined it across the night and across the naps. Why is this relevant? Well, so many people come to me and say with a worried tone that they seem to need 8.5 to 9.5 hours of sleep a night, and they're usually whispering it because they're almost embarrassed. And they'll ask me, is this harmful? Is it non-optimal? Is it too much sleep? Let's go back to our definition of what optimal sleep is and what would be a sign of getting, quote unquote, too much sleep. If it was too much sleep, then we should see negative consequences to sleeping that increased amount in both of those studies. We should see that the performance of either their brain or measures of their body health would decline as a consequence of that increased sleep amount, demonstrating to us that it is not optimal, that it is, in fact, too much. Both of those independent studies provided a clear and singular answer. No, it was not too much. It was not harmful. It wasn't non-optimal. You see, throughout the course of both of those studies, the researchers were not only measuring their sleep, they were also testing the cognitive abilities of those participants as a way of assessing their brain, and they were also measuring changes in their bodies, changes in their hormonal health, their metabolic health, and also specific markers of stress chemistry within the bloodstream. In the study from the scientists in Japan, what they found is that when individuals went from that almost 7.5 hours of sleep each night coming into the study, all the way up to that 8.75 hours of sleep a night, their neurocognitive functioning, the ability of their brain, improved significantly. And this was exactly what the scientists from the Harvard and Surrey research groups replicated in their new study. What they found is that their ability to focus and concentrate on tasks improved, their reaction times were significantly faster, and they attempted to solve more task problems, and indeed, they did solve more of those cognitive task problems. In other words, this increased sleep amount, an amount that some people come to me and they worry, is this non-optimal? Is this too much? Was quite the opposite. In fact, that increased amount of sleep seemed to be a natural nootropic. It was boosting the cognitive performance of those individuals. They were even more sharp-minded. Downstairs, within the body, the story was the same. Blood sugar levels were significantly improved when those individuals started sleeping 8.5 to 9 hours a night, decreasing away from the direction of diabetes. Hormonal health also improved, with levels of key elements such as thyroid-stimulating hormone and also thyroxine, which help us manage our metabolic rate and our heart and our digestive functions and our muscle function and our bone health. All of those things improved as well. And finally, two key stress-related hormones called cortisol and adrenocorticotropin, both of those measures decreased. And those measures are usually measures of biological stress. And when those measures decrease, they are associated with superior health and longevity outcomes. So what do these new studies teach us? Well, they've given us a fundamental lesson. The self-proclaimed ideal sleep amount that those individuals felt that was required for them was incorrect. So to the question of, am I getting enough sleep? Based on these studies for these individuals, and again with an important caveat that I'll come back to in a second, the answer was no. They were not getting enough sleep. Their own self-guesstimate of sleep need was substantially less than their true inherent biological sleep need. With need here, in inverted commas, with need being defined by how well the brain and the body of those individuals was functioning, which in accordance with the scientists of those studies was a very reasonable measure of what sleep need actually is. It suggests that some of us may be consistently operating below our human potential, unknowingly so, and held back by a ball and chain of sleep debt that we carry with us each day. The other supporter of this podcast is the electrolyte drink company called Element. Now, it's actually four letters, L-M-N-T. I am a bit of an exercise fanatic, and I started buying their products some years ago, really, because of two key facts. First is the lack of sugar content. Element has no sugar. It also has no colorings, no artificial ingredients, which is unlike many of the other mixes out there that I was shopping. The second is because of the founders, who have some serious years of biochemistry experience under their belts, and they know what they're doing. So if you want to give it a try, just go to drinklmnt.com/Matt Walker, and you will get 8 free sample packs on any order that you place. Once again, that is drinklmnt.com/Matt Walker. So that was the question of, am I getting enough sleep? For which, in those studies, for those individuals, the answer seemed to be no. So for our two questions of the day, am I getting enough sleep? Based on that evidence, for those individuals, the answer seemed to be no. And to the question of, can I get too much sleep? Based on that evidence, the answer was the same. No, it didn't seem to be too much. Because when those individuals started sleeping as much as they could, getting close to an average of almost 9 hours of sleep a night, nothing in the measures of their brain function or their body function suggested that things were worse. Instead, things only got better. Things only improved. But now to that important caveat. Both of these studies were performed in young, healthy individuals with an average age in their 20s. I don't want anyone listening to this in their late 30s, 40s, or beyond to start thinking that 8.6 hours a night or even 8.75 hours of sleep a night is their true sleep need or what they should start to expect. That is unrealistic and it is unreasonable. Please don't start stressing. Please don't start worrying. We've not yet done the studies where we move forward decade by decade by decade in life to understand exactly what that optimal sleep amount is. Although I should note that there was a similar type of free consuming sleep evaluation that was performed in older adults in their 70s and beyond, and they still found that those older adults, when given the chance, acquiesced to around about 7.4 hours of sleep a night. And I am going to go a little further with this caveat. I'm going to play devil's advocate to the answer of, no, there is no such thing as too much sleep. I believe there could be a thing as too much sleep. Now, I'll do another episode on the epidemiological studies that suggest a U-shaped relationship between sleep and mortality, and I'll do that at another time. This argument I'm about to make is different, because I don't think that sleeping, let's say, 18 hours a day or even 20 hours a day, should that be even physiologically possible, is more optimal than getting, say, 8.75 hours of sleep a night. I don't think sleep is going to operate in such a linear manner. But keep in mind, this is no different than the other three essential ingredients of life: food, oxygen, and water. Can you eat too much? Yes, and in excess, it will shorten your life. Can you drink too much? Yes, extreme hydration with water can dilute essential electrolytes in your bloodstream that prevent the functioning of your brain and your heart, leading to fatal consequences such as stroke or heart attack. Can you get too much oxygen? Yes, you can. It's called hyperoxia, and it's toxic to cells, especially cells within your brain. I think sleep is perhaps going to be very much like these other three critical ingredients of food, water, and oxygen. After all, wakefulness in the correct amount is wonderfully and evolutionary adaptive, just as sleep is. Both sleep and wake provide synergistic and critical, though often different, survival advantages. There's a balance to be struck between the two. Are most people in society in danger of getting too much sleep? Au contraire. And with that push-pull of a devil's advocate argument, I will say thank you for listening, bid you farewell, wish you a fair weather night of sleep ahead. Take care. Bye for now.